Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. In today's episode, I'm going to be talking about how to travel as you navigate your chronic fatigue, chronic illness, energy limiting illness, recovery, however you like to talk about your health journey. I often used to call it my healing adventure. So as you navigate your healing adventure, how to think about travel, if traveling is something that you want to do, how to minimize the impact of travel on your health so that you can enjoy travel, and maybe just some things to be aware of, like when to not travel, for example, or things to consider if you are planning a trip. So I'll be sharing with you just some of my own thoughts and experiences around travel, things that I found helpful, things that clients have found helpful, and how to think about traveling as part of your journey. If you haven't already, this is the very boring part of the podcast where I ask you to leave a review. And I'm sure I've said this so many times, but I'm always noticing on Spotify and iTunes, the review numbers just creeping up, you know, a couple of new reviews each week. I love reading the written reviews that people put on iTunes. And if you haven't already left a review, I would really appreciate it if you could. It only takes a few minutes of your time, but your reviews and ratings help other people find the podcast. It improves the podcast rankings. And then that means that more people get access to this knowledge and the help and support that they need, because we know that the chronic illness community is chronically, excuse the pun, underserved. A lot of people are looking for good information. A lot of people are left wanting by the traditional medical system, and they're looking for answers. So I want more people to find this work and more people to have access to good quality information. And in addition to the free podcast and this idea of access to good quality information, I also just wanted to remind you, if you don't know already, that I recently upgraded the Nurturing Resilience subscription to become the Nurturing Resilience membership, which is just really a technicality in the name. But now the membership includes what I call the foundational five. So you would have heard me talk endlessly, perhaps, especially in more recent episodes, about the importance of stabilizing when you have a chronic illness. And there's five things that I've identified which are really important when it comes to stabilizing your system. They are the nervous system, blood sugar management, probably two of my favorite topics, sleep, pacing, and managing inflammation in the body. And so what I've done is I've created a series of courses on these different topics so that you can have access to information that will help you stabilize your system. The original program was just a nervous system program. So the nervous system course, which is inside the membership, is incredibly thorough and in-depth. But I've added now a course on managing your blood sugar, a course on pacing, a course on sleep, and then a course on managing inflammation in the body, which has also got some information on managing things like MCAS and histamine intolerance, supplement sensitivity, and lots of different dietary guidelines. If you're following a low histamine diet, if you're following a low oxalate diet, if you're doing a paleo diet, there's different resources available to you. And then there's also additional modules. So there's a module on detoxification and drainage. There's a module on oxygenation. There's a module on digestive health. And then there's some bonus content, which includes yin yoga videos, breath work, the works, really. You can have access to all of this fantastic information for £39 a month plus VAT, which is, if you're not in the UK, you may not know what VAT is, but it's unfortunately an extra 20% business tax that I do have to charge. But even then, the content is really affordable, really accessible. I'm getting fantastic feedback from the members all the time in terms of how much it's helping them. And twice a month, we also have a group call where you can join me on Zoom with your chronic illness community, and we can talk and you can ask questions and we can have a discussion about all these things that you feel curious about and you just don't know where to go and who to ask. So obviously all this information on the blog and the podcast is for free, but if you would like to take things up a notch, if you do have a little bit of money to invest in your journey, then I'd highly recommend joining the Nurturing Resilience membership. You just have to go to my website and it's linked there under membership, and you can sign up and start straight away and join the group calls. So now, advertisements over, let's dive into the episode and let's talk a little bit about traveling with chronic illness. Where I'd like to lead when we talk about traveling with chronic illness is that travel is destabilizing. I've just very briefly talked about the importance of stabilizing your system when you have a chronic illness. And people who have experienced chronic illness often have what we call a syndromal pattern in their nervous system, which means that their nervous system can be highly sensitive and very unstable. And this is because there's probably been an accumulation of survival responses in the body that have never been able to be processed or discharged. And as a consequence of this, there's been increasing amounts of disorganization in the system, which really wears down our capacity to cope with change, our capacity to cope with stress, and our capacity to cope with new experiences, even if they are positive experiences, like experiencing new cultures or seeing beautiful scenery or trying new foods. For somebody who has enough capacity and resilience in their system, that can be really exciting. But sometimes people with chronic illness struggle to hold the excitement, the newness, the novelty in their body. And that can be destabilizing and cause a lot of dysregulation, irrespective of the fact that travel itself can be really stressful. Eating different foods or maybe being exposed to different foods that you potentially react to can also be very stressful. So travel is something we have to be quite mindful of when we're navigating a health journey. And personally, in my own sort of fatigue recovery journey, maybe perhaps it was a bit of a blessing, but I was at my worst during lockdown. So there wasn't even really any opportunity to travel. All the opportunities were taken away. Then even as I started to become well again, I didn't necessarily have a lot of finances as I was building up my business to travel. So by the time I actually did any sort of significant travel, I had already gone back to the gym. I was already regularly working out for an hour a day. I was able to easily walk for 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 steps if I needed to. So I had a really good physical and mental capacity by the time I did any significant traveling. That was just partly due to the way that life worked out for me at the time. It wasn't necessarily 100% intentional, but I do think that there's a lot of value in not doing anything that's going to disturb your system too much while you're working on your health. That being said, we also need to live our lives, and sometimes things come up and sometimes we just need a break. And therefore we may decide to make different decisions based on the circumstance. So what I did is I put together a little list of pros and cons of travel, because what you decide to do is going to be very unique to you, and it's going to be about what matters to you, and it's going to be specific to your situation. So in terms of cons, what I've already said, travel can be inherently destabilizing. It requires energy. The physical act of traveling, for example, getting to an airport, getting on a plane, doing a trip, wheeling your luggage around, whatever it might be, that's all going to require energy. Physical energy, and also energy due to sensory stimulation. Maybe in an airport where there's bright overhead lights, there's a lot of busyness, there's a lot of sounds, or even being in a car or on a train with the landscape just like rushing by can be a lot of stimulation for a brain that's not used to that. Even if you are taking rest while you're in the process of travel, the rest is probably going to be less restful because you're not in a nice comfy bed or a nice comfy sofa in a quiet environment, which is familiar, you're probably going to be in a busier, noisier environment with a lot more going on, which is probably less comfortable. We might not be hydrating well. We might not be eating foods which are as supportive for our body. We might have unknown exposures. So for example, if you hire an Airbnb and then the Airbnb has mold, or they're using a lot of toxic fragrance in the Airbnb, or they've washed the sheets with something which has fragrance in it and you're very sensitive, or you haven't realized it, but the place you're staying is on a noisy road or there's noisy neighbors, you know, there's all those unknowns which can make things a little bit more stressful. Your sleep may be impacted because you're in a new and different environment. And then there's just also the general sort of stresses, anxieties about travel. So for example, delays, transfers, are things going to run smoothly? Are there going to be any issues? So there's multiple different things that can potentially be stressful. Someone who has good health, good resilience, good capacity in their nervous system even feels tired if they've had to navigate all of these things. Somebody who is well would also maybe feel stressed if they have to navigate some of the things that I've mentioned here. The difference between someone who's robust and healthy and resilient and someone with chronic illness is often the capacity of their system. With lower energy, with less resources, with lower window or smaller window of tolerance in the nervous system, it's a lot for someone to manage. They can easily become overwhelmed. And for this reason, crashes and flares can happen when we travel. However, there are some pros to travel. For example, sometimes the change in scenery and the change in routine can really help to shift some of the stuckness that can be in our nervous systems. So even though the act of getting somewhere or traveling somewhere could be really stressful and overwhelming, then being somewhere in nature with beautiful scenery, good weather, being able to lounge on a lilo in a swimming pool, it just changes the day-to-day experience that we're having. And there can be so much to be said for sort of pulling us out of ourselves, out of some of these stuck patterns in the nervous system. And that can be really, really great for people in terms of actually supporting them, supporting their nervous systems and helping them feel good. And so even though the actual act of traveling can be quite stressful, when we reach the destination, there may be more resources, for example, sunshine, beautiful scenery, nature, maybe the people that you've met if you've gone to see friends or family who are really lovely and supportive for you. So we're potentially getting a lot of positive signals to our nervous system, which can take us out of the day-to-day, stuck in a rut, mundane existence. And that can really help to shift things in a positive direction when we're feeling stuck in a rut of pacing and eating a certain way and taking our supplements and having a bedtime routine. Although I do think those routines and structures are important, sometimes we can get so stuck in them that we're constantly reinforcing to ourselves that we're unwell. Additionally, sometimes travel forces us out of our comfort zone. Sometimes people can do more than what they think they can. And then when they go on holiday and they almost have to operate differently, they have to go to bed later, or they can't pace as perfectly, or they have to eat different foods, or they actually end up doing a bit more physical activity, they discover that they can. And that can be a really empowering thing, especially for people who tend more towards undercoping, which is doing less than what they actually can. It can really just help to shake things up and create some new neural pathways and self-belief. And with this idea of shaking things up and getting out of a rut that you might be stuck in, something we actually talk a lot about in the nervous system course in the Nurturing Resilience membership is this concept, which is overcoupling. So overcoupling is a term from somatic experiencing where two things are very closely linked. So very, very common one for chronic fatigue is exercise and fear. because we've had these experiences in the past where we've exercised and we've crashed, we've exercised and we've had horrific PEM. There's a memory in the body about when last time I did this, that happened. And then I tried again, I did this and the same thing happened. We start to get an overcoupling, which is exercise and fear. But there can be multiple things. There can be so many different things in our life that are overcoupled. Eat this food, get this reaction in the belly, or go to bed late, don't sleep well, have a bad day the next day, whatever it might be. And so when we are in this completely different environment, doing things in a different way, we have this opportunity where there's less overcoupling because we're out of our day-to-day routine, and we have the opportunity to build some of these new neural pathways. Oh, I can move my body and not crash, or I can eat this food and not get the digestive symptoms or brain fog or whatever it might be. So there can be then this break from the stress, the structure, the rigidity of everyday life. And personally, I've also found like sometimes if you're eating certain foods because you're on a certain diet, you can kind of get stuck in a rut with food and it can be really boring. And if you go to a different country and the food is different, even if you are choosing within the framework of your dietary guidelines, you just might eat things in a different way or different combinations. And that can actually be really inspiring to shake up a diet, which has become a little bit bland and boring. And you might come back with some more inspiration to keep food fresh and exciting when you get back home after your trip. So lots of pros to traveling, lots of cons to traveling. And when it comes to weighing up, which way do you go? Do you take the trip? Do you not take the trip? I think it's ultimately going to be a personal choice based on your state of health and what you're also focusing on at this point in time in your recovery journey. So my preference when I'm working with clients is, and this sounds super selfish, but for a lot of the people that I work with, I really prefer it if they don't travel, or if they are going to travel, that it's not long haul with jet lag or something like that. Because the longer the trip and the more disruption to circadian rhythm, the bigger the impact this is going to have on that person's system. And while they're working with me, I want them to get the best possible results. I don't want them to be disrupted for, you know, a month of that process or whatever it might be. But on the sort of flip side of that, sometimes when people travel, as I've said already, it does help to unstick them. It does help them see what they're capable of. It does help to change perspective, and they come back with refreshed energy, with refreshed focus, with a sense that they believe that they can do more. And that can be a really, really positive thing. So if someone is at the right point in their journey and they have enough capacity to manage the trip, they haven't like unrealistically overextended themselves, travel can actually be a really great asset to the process of recovery. So at the end of the day, it is a personal choice. Depending on the person, I would say not to do something too big or too drastic, especially if they're really trying to work on building some of those stable foundations, working on the foundational five. And they probably wouldn't be advised to take a big trip just as you're starting some sort of protocol. So if you're working on like a detox or antimicrobial, where there's the opportunity to become destabilized through the detox or through taking the herbs or whatever it is you're doing, that's not a really good time to go on a big trip. So that needs to sort of be planned and timed around the travel plans if they are going to happen. But obviously we do have different types of travel. And when we're looking at being more in the world as we navigate this healing journey or illness experience, we always want to think of the principle of titration. So again, titration is a concept from somatic experiencing, which just means that we do things slowly. We do things little by little so that the nervous system can adjust. Okay, we've done this little piece, give the nervous system space to adjust and integrate, and then we do the next little piece. And then as capacity grows, we do a bit more, we do a bit more, we do a bit more, and so on and so on. So from a travel perspective, the principle of titration could look as follows. A day trip, driving in a car, even if it's just an hour's drive in a car, even if it's just 20 minutes drive in a car, if that's not what you've been doing, a really small day trip, you drive somewhere, you have a lunch, you do a walk, you swim in the sea, whatever it might be, drive home again, that could be the first step in terms of getting travel fit. It could also be traveling via public transport. Maybe a car is fine, but you know, could you get on a bus somewhere? Could you get on a train somewhere? Because that's going to challenge the body in a different way to a car journey. And then maybe it could be some sort of overnight stay or a camping trip. And maybe that's just one night or a couple of nights. And you know, when I said that I didn't really do any traveling until I was really, really well, there was one time that I went away glamping for two nights, which was literally like half an hour's drive down the road. So that was just like a little example of getting that change of scenery, getting that change of perspective, being somewhere different, seeing new things, trying new things, eating different foods. But it wasn't this massive, you know, long haul flight with jet lag. It was just a very small little trip. So we talked about day trips, we talked about overnight trips, we talked about car versus public transport. And then as you're trying to like extend this travel fitness, it could be a longer car journey, it could be a longer train journey, it could then be a short flight, and then it could be a long flight. And then it could be a long flight with jet lag, depending on where you want to go in the world. So we kind of, if we're thinking about travel, if we're thinking about leaning into the pros of travel, then we want to build up some sort of travel fitness so we can get that change in experience. These are different ways we can think about planning around it. And this is where I think attunement is so important. So attunement is something I've been referencing quite a bit in previous episodes, talking about being bedbound, being housebound, and going back to work, which is really about you being able to sense from your nervous system what you need and honoring it. And so when we attune to ourselves, we're in harmony with our needs, we're in harmony with our body. You know, if we're really kind of going down the rabbit hole with this, we're really oftentimes being the parent that we never had for ourselves. And so if we can attune to what feels manageable, then we could pick something, you know, pick, oh, I could do a car journey, I could do a day trip, I could do a short flight, whatever it might be, pick something and go with that, trusting that on the other side, there's going to be those benefits of all the new experiences and neural pathways ready just to lift our spirits. And so once you've picked the experience that you would like to have, then we want to think about how you can really support yourself so that there's not a big fear response around the change. I've kind of talked about that concept of overcoupling, so where fear and exercise are very closely connected. An example here might be there might be a fear of being out of routine, a fear of flying, a fear of the trip, a fear of not having your 20,000 supplements with you, a fear of what the food might be like. So there can be a lot of fear around the change, which we need to support ourselves through before the trip happens. Because otherwise, you're going to sit there and you're going to be worrying the whole time about the trip. And so this is where somatic tools can really be helpful to support that uncoupling of the fear and whatever it is, fear of travel in this case. But we can also do some positive visualizations. We can think of times where we have done things and been successful and how good that felt in the body. Or we can mentally rehearse. You see yourself getting to the airport. You see everything running smoothly. You're feeling strong in your body. You're feeling rested on the plane, whatever it might be. you can create some positive visualizations where you see the success before it's happened, so that your body starts to associate this whole little process that you're going to do when you go on your trip with positive sensations and safety. And, you know, you have a choice. The time between now and whenever the trip may be is going to go by. You can spend that time ruminating, getting anxious, worrying about things, or you can spend that time working on your nervous system and really reassuring yourself that everything is going to be great and run smoothly. The choice is up to you. So that's kind of like a pre-preparation, something to consider. We also want to make sure we're not doing any intense protocols at the same time we're going to do a trip that is potentially going to be unsettling. And then something for the menstruating humans is that you may also want to plan trips around your menstrual cycle. Really hard to do if it's very far ahead of in the future and you have cycles which are sometimes a bit shorter, a bit longer, or regular. I know for myself personally that I feel better at certain times in my cycle. So I wouldn't necessarily want to be getting on a plane on day one or two of my cycle. And the ideal time for me is I usually feel great once I've ovulated for the remaining 2 weeks of my cycle. So that's a really great time for me to put my body under more stress. Unfortunately, you can't always plan these things ahead of time, but if you can and you know that some parts of your cycle you feel more vulnerable compared to other parts of your cycle, timing can really impact that. As an example, in 2023, which was the first trip that I did after my illness and was also the first like long haul flight that I had done since my illness, I started my period on the plane on the way, you know, I was flying to South Africa to see my family. So I literally started on the plane. And that was just like, I felt really sort of grotty for the first few days, probably also not helped by my dietary choices, which is something I'll come to in a moment. And then last year, I went on a surf holiday to Sri Lanka, and it was long haul and with jet lag. And the day I got back from the trip, my period started and I was really, really a lot more tired than usual for that week after I returned from my trip. And I think that the where I was in my menstrual cycle had a big part to play in that. But as I said, sometimes we just can't always plan and control these things. So those are things to think about in the run-up to the trip, preparing your nervous system and just preparing mentally, timing around your menstrual cycle if you can, and then also just making sure that you're not going through any, you know, destabilizing protocols at the same time, and also that you're not doing a sprint finish. And by a sprint finish, I mean that like life is really busy and you're doing a million things. And then just to like finish everything and wrap everything up before you go on holiday. A lot of people with chronic illness are probably not going to be in that situation because they might not be working or they might not be working full time. And therefore, maybe there's less responsibilities that need to be completed before a trip. But if you are somebody who is in the working world or has a lot of responsibilities in your personal life, then what I like to do is give a little bit of space. So I would usually like finish work on a Thursday, have the Friday as a day off, and then travel on the Saturday. So I'm not like finishing work and then trying to pack and rush to the airport all in a very short space of time. So remember, our nervous systems love space. We want to give ourselves space to transition from one thing to the next, not be sprinting all the way down to the wire. And same thing probably worth mentioning when I come back from a trip. I usually like to come back from a trip on a Friday. So I've got the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, just to integrate back into my space before getting back into work. I know some people might not want to do that because they really want to extend the length of the trip or their holiday time. But I know for me and my nervous system, that's what feels the most resourcing and the most supportive. So then in terms of the actual travel piece, things to think about when you're traveling would be food, hydration, things to support your sensory load. So perhaps you need a good eye mask. Perhaps you need some glasses if you're going to be exposed to bright lights. Maybe you need some noise cancelling headphones, and maybe even things, especially for long haul flights, like compression socks, just to aid circulation and blood flow throughout the body. The two things that I've found the most helpful is to eat really, really well. Sometimes when people go on holiday, there's almost like a signal, it's holiday time, I can throw caution to the wind, I can eat what I like because I'm on holiday. And of course, you're more than welcome to eat whatever you like on your holiday. But if you really want to manage your health and inflammatory symptoms, I highly recommend eating in a way that avoids processed foods, inflammatory foods, blood sugar spikes, toxins, for example, alcohol. Just continuing to eat, you know, really, really clean, especially in the unstable time, which is the travel. Once you actually get to the other side and you've had a little bit of integration time and now you're relaxed and you're enjoying yourself, you actually may have the flexibility to eat, have a few more treats and eat differently. But when you're in that unstable travel time, we really want to stabilize ourselves as much as possible with the things that are within our control. So what I would usually do, I'll use just some examples of when I travel from South Africa, and when I fly out of the UK to South Africa, I find it harder to get good food at Heathrow, which is where I usually fly from. But there's usually a Pret or something like that. So I might actually buy like a salad or like a couple of salads, and I take those onto the plane with me instead of having the airplane food. You could also, for example, buy some nuts, dark chocolate, like 85% dark chocolate, fruits, things like that, which, all sort of kind of whole single ingredient, anti-inflammatory ingredients are going to be really supportive. When I fly out of South Africa, I usually fly out of Johannesburg. I know they've got a little Woolworths supermarket there where I can get some really nice salads again and protein, like biltong, which is going to give me my salt and my protein. And I can usually take all of that through security. So I sort of stock up in the supermarket with lots of healthy bits that I can take on the plane with me. And I can tell you now, when I do that versus when I don't do that, it really, really changes how I feel, and it changes the recovery that I have after the flight has happened. So I cannot say this, or I cannot recommend this highly enough, but if you can eat really, really well while you're in transit, that will make a huge difference to how you feel and the impact on your nervous system. Additionally, hydration is really important. Being dehydrated can especially increase histamine in the body, and that's going to be increase the inflammatory load. So we want to make sure that we're hydrating really well. I always take a water bottle, fill it up at the water stations and the airport, that type of thing. Obviously, if you're not traveling long distance, it's much easier to do these things, but I'm kind of focusing on the long distance piece because that's when it's a little bit harder. I like to take electrolytes in my water. So the electrolytes I really like are the Repower electrolytes. And I've got a 10% discount link, which I'll link with this episode. But they're really great because they come in little sachets. So really easy just to like pop one in your water bottle and then pop a couple of sachets in your bag. And then you can have a few more electrolytes while you're traveling. I've got a really great eye mask, which I bought from Amazon. It completely blacks out everything. So if I'm doing an overnight flight, I just pop my eye mask on, and I generally do sleep quite well on airplanes. I just usually will put a film on, something I can just listen to cut out the noise, and then put my eye mask on. I don't actually watch the film. And then I find that or either a podcast can sort of really sort of lull me to sleep. That works for me, but it might be something completely different for you. You might want to use some noise canceling headphones or earbuds, as I recommended. Have some dark glasses if you are overwhelmed by the bright lights in the airport. And then compression socks can be really helpful for circulation, especially if you're someone with a little bit more dysautonomia or POTS, things like that. And for you, especially, again, hydration is going to be super important. And then depending on your capacity, also think about getting wheelchair assistance. That can make such a difference because you can walk a lot in airports. Personally, if walking is within your capacity and you actually have enough of that robustness, moving around a lot and doing as much walking as you can between periods of sitting can be really beneficial for circulation and energy and blood sugar management. But each person is going to have to manage that within their capacity, and often wheelchair assistance is, you know, can be super helpful. The other thing, I have to thank Charlotte Whiteman, who I've interviewed on the podcast before about restorative yoga, is a lot of places have prayer rooms. A lot of airports have prayer rooms where you can go in and you may just, you know, want to go into a prayer room and do some quiet meditation, or even find a comfy spot in the airport and lie with your legs up the wall. Great for getting more blood flow to the brain, more oxygenation to the brain. You know, don't be afraid to do something that looks a little bit weird, just so that you can get some rest and restoration as you pace your travel. Then in terms of actually sort of practically being somewhere, I'm a big fan of self-catering, mostly because I like to be in control of my food and I like to eat really well. Even when I am traveling, not to say I might not also eat out or try new things, but I like for the most part to have a lot of access to healthy food and healthy ingredients. So some of the traveling that I did prior to the long haul flight to South Africa was mostly traveling for my training in somatic experiencing, when I would have to go to London once every 6 months for a week as part of the training. And I would always get a self-catering apartment, get an Ocado delivery to deliver all my healthy foods for the week, so that I know I had the really nice space where I could make healthy food, look after myself. And that worked really well for me at the time. But, you know, you may have other needs, depending on you or your family or whoever you're traveling with. So it's also a case of finding out what works best for you. Then the other question that I get is about supplements. And people always ask me, especially my clients ask me, if they're taking quite a lot of supplements, they might say, well, do I have to take all of these supplements when I travel? And so personally, when I travel, I tend to travel light in terms of supplements. I always take some supplements, but really just like whittling it down to a few of the most important ones. And then I leave most of the other ones at home. And this is another reason why you don't want to be doing any kind of intensive protocols when you travel, is because then you've got to take all the supplements with you. But things that I would usually take would be like digestive aids. So maybe like a probiotic or stomach acid support like betaine and pepsin, or digestive enzyme. Because if you are eating different foods, it can be helpful to have a little bit more digestive support. I always like a B complex. A lot of my clients have at least got like one B vitamin that they need a little bit more of. So a B complex, I feel, kind of covers a lot of the bases. Sleep aids, especially, you know, when we're not in our own environment and we are sleeping in different places, sleep sometimes doesn't come as easily. So if you're somebody who relies on sleep aids when you're at home, then sleep aids when you're traveling is probably going to be really, really helpful. And in the past, I've always taken glutathione just because I think it's such a great supplement anyway. People with chronic illness, a lot of people with chronic illness need it. So glutathione would be something else that I've often taken. Recently, I went to Croatia on a swimming holiday, and I just took my digestive aids, magnesium for sleep and electrolytes, potassium as well for electrolytes. So that's sort of, that was my supplement selection on my most recent holiday. But previously, it would just be, you know, some sort of digestive support, glutathione, B complex, maybe some magnesium for sleep as well. So we've covered a lot. I think the only thing perhaps not haven't really touched on in that much depth is just returning home, which I think is kind of just the same. A lot of the same principles apply on the outbound journey to the inbound journey. But just to reiterate that it's really important to give space for integration. I've had these discussions with clients. I've had these discussions in the Nurturing Resilience membership. I've had these experiences for myself where you can go away on holiday. You can feel amazing. You eat all the foods you couldn't eat at home. Like, you have less digestive symptoms. You do more activity. You're so proud of your body for everything that you've achieved. And then you can come back and feel more exhausted. And there's obviously multiple different reasons for that. It could be a build up of, just, you know, all the energy you've expended on your trip. And just to say here that the exhaustion doesn't mean that it failed. And the exhaustion doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you. And how I would describe this from a nervous system perspective is that the nervous system is always expanding and contracting and expanding and contracting. It's moving through activation, settling, activation, settling, sympathetic, parasympathetic. So to be healthy is to be flexible and to be in motion. It's the opposite of being stuck. And so when we've had a big expansion because we've done this amazing trip, even if the amazing trip is the half hour trip down the road or whatever it is, we've had this new, big, expansive experience. And then that expands us. And then we need to allow some space for the contraction to happen. And that might mean we need a little bit more rest so that the system and the body can integrate the changes that occurred. And therefore, you want to maybe plan off the back end of your trip to have some integration space. That's why I said I always like to come back on a Friday or like on Saturday morning so that there's Saturday, Sunday to integrate back in. But I also prefer it if the whole of the next week isn't too busy with work and I had a lot of time and a lot of spaciousness in my schedule to re-land. And I just cannot stress this enough, is that you don't want to expect to go away and have a big expansive experience and come back and just get back into everything like nothing happened. I think some of the tiredness and fatigue is actually very supportive in the sense that it slows us down and it gives the body the opportunity to process the amazing experience that we had. So as you plan your trip, just remember that there may be some more fatigue on the back end. You want to allow space for that without judgment, without distress, without fear and overcoupling. And you want to just really appreciate that you got to do the trip and that everything that your body was able to do and achieve. So we've talked about a lot today. I hope you have enjoyed this discussion. I hope you have taken some tips away if travel is on your radar of things that you would like to do. And I will see you in the next episode.